what we want to do now is move to this next, I guess, kind of argument here. And this one, he says, is based on causality, and this is the cosmological argument. Now, again, we might say, well, wait a minute, I thought he was a presuppositionist. What's he doing using these various arguments? Well, stick with us here, and we'll see how he uses these arguments from his presuppositional perspective. He says the cosmological argument is somewhat broader than the teleological argument. While the teleological argument focuses on one phenomena, right, within the world, that of purpose or design, the cosmological argument asserts that every finite reality, whether it appears to be designed or not, must be dependent on an infinite God simply because of its finitude, right? Mm-hmm. Its finitude. And so notice he's suggesting that this argument is broader than the teleological argument because it looks at everything that is, you know, contingent, we might say, or has finitude.
Right. So, what about this one? Well, it goes back to this one. Well, what about that one? You go back and back and back. And at some point, you're either going to have to admit that we've never gotten to where we're at because you go back infinity, or that there's something there at the beginning, and it doesn't seem like it could be finite. It has to be infinite. Well, okay, but there are many types of cosmological arguments. And in fact, I think in your introductory philosophy class, you're probably going to hit about five of them or so. But he says he will consider here only the argument from cause. Belief in causes is an aspect of a commitment to reason. Roughly speaking, causes are the reason and reasons are causes. Okay. To deny.
So that's I think that's an important part of what he's going to say here. So we need to really hone in on that because he's going to use that over and over again. Reasons are causes and causes are reasons.
Right. Right. Why did that happen? Archduke Franz Ferdinand was assassinated, led to the start of World War One. Well, why did that happen? Well, that cause was the reason for the assassination. And then you go back. Well, what about the Black Man? What about the formation of the group? What about all the alliances? And where do those come from? Well, you're going to get causes, which are the reasons. So to deny that is to claim that some events are irrational happenings. And again, it's not a it's a praxeology understanding. It's not that we have perfect rationality that we're saying, okay, well, 2 + 2 is close to 5, so we'll round up. But it's really 4. It's not saying that they're irrational in the sense that it's done without perfect thought, but it's just done with no thought, with nothing happened that caused these things to come about. That's where the irrational happenings come from. But if some event took place without a reason, how could reason know it? For example, how could reason prove such a negative as this event has no cause at all? Isn't that a cause too? So it has no cause at all. So where did it come from? Well, it didn't. So it just popped into existence. Well, okay. No side wants to say that. Well, to prove that, one would have to assume and to assure oneself that all possible causes have been ruled out. The classic line of, I know there's no tea in China. Well, how do I know that? I have to have perfect knowledge of every square inch of China. And I have to have a governmental system that goes into people's houses and checks for tea and the little tea cozies and make sure that that's not happening. And that's when I can make the claim there's absolutely no tea in China.
Right. Well, and so this is this whole issue of trying to prove a negative, right?
Right. Right.
Which is virtually impossible.
Which is really hard. The watermelon is blue until I cut into it. Prove me wrong. Okay. So assure oneself that all possible causes have been ruled out, and to reach that conclusion would require omniscience, perfect knowledge, absolute perfect knowledge, in order to say that would be the case.
Right. In other words, to prove if we're going to try and prove a negative, he's suggesting the only way that we can do that is we would have to know everything, right? So what is there? There may be tea under a small rock in China somewhere that we've never observed. Right. But we'd have to, know everything in order to know that there is no tea in China. Right. And that's the point he's trying to make. He says further, the nature of reason is to inquire after causes. Right. So notice he's trying to link this issue of reason and causes. And if reason does not find the cause, it does not conclude that there is no cause. Rather, it looks further, or else it sets the problem aside for future investigation. Yeah,
we even do this in science. But, you know, okay, we need to find the structure of all basic life. Okay, here's the atom. It's a proton, it's an electron, and a neutron. I wonder what protons are made of. And so, you know, we're the kids that get the next level of Wi-Fi signal that's faster. Well, I wonder if it could be faster. So we just ask, you know, okay, well, what's the basic building block of all life? Atoms. Okay, what makes up atoms? And so we're always looking for down the line, but there's no understanding of like a stopping point. We're always looking for that next. Well, why is the structure of the proton what it is? And so we'll just keep going from there.
Or we set this problem aside until we come back to it later, right?
Right, exactly.
And so, you know, of course, he says there is one exception to this rule. Once reason finds what it regards as a complete cause, then the final and ultimate explanation for the phenomena under consideration has been found, and so inquiry can cease there.
Right. But we can't even do that. It's rare. But those who claim that some events in the world are uncaused are, to that extent, irrationalists. Like all rationalists, they run into problems when they try to argue their case rationally. For there is no way to prove rationally, apart, of course, from divine revelation, that any particular event in the world is causeless. This thing just happened. Well, okay, but how is that the case? Even when we talk about the Big Bang, and I think even Lawrence Krauss has argued against his own position that nothing happened and nothing exploded. Well, he goes, well, when I mean nothing, I don't mean nothing, nothing. I mean, there was something that happened. So even then, nothing isn't, I mean, nothing would be an initial starting point. But then you would be an irrationalist. But you'd say, oh, well, you know, in this vacuum, we see these particles pop in and out of existence. So that's exactly what happened in the Big Bang. Well, but there has to be something in order for it to pop in and out of existence of. And so what's there? And so, again, you're asking a follow up question of what were the reasons and what were the causes, or you become irrationalist. And if some events are causeless, how could it have happened? From nothing comes nothing, as the saying goes. Furthermore, if one event in the world lacks a cause, then the world as a whole lacks a cause. And if the world as a whole is without reason, then irrationalists triumph. And us having a conversation like, what do you want to do today? Well, let's do these things. Why do you want to do those things? Well, hold on. We're irrationalists. We're just going to do things. And even that is an argument.
Yeah. And so he says, cause gives a reason why things happen. The idea of cause, it's a reason why things happen. And so once that intuition is honored and irrationalism is excluded, then the cosmological argument, he says, can begin to make some progress. That every event in the world has a cause means that everything in the world happens for some reason. But suppose that there is no first cause, no uncaused cause at the beginning of the process. Well, he says, in that case, there is no complete explanation, no complete reason why any event took place. But it, you know, if we don't have a cause, then we don't have a complete explanation. If there is no first cause, the process of explanation just kind of keeps on going and going, and an infinite regress for which there is no ending point takes place. And that's what you were alluding to earlier, right? You just keep going and going to the next thing and to the next thing. He says, but if there is no end, then there is no cognitive rests, is what he says. So we, you know, I guess, what does that mean? We need a rest for our brains, a cognitive rest. We'd have to keep going and going to try to find an explanation. He says you just keep going on and on from one particular reason to another. And your quest never ends. You never reach the complete reason that you set out to find. And thus, in the end, irrationalism, if you can never reach the complete reason, then irrationalism wins out. And there is no final explanation for anything. And so if there's no final explanation, what he's suggesting here is we're left in the kind of the bog of irrationalism because, you know, we have this infinite regress and no final explanation.
Yeah, there's a great essay. It's an economic essay by Leonard Reed called I, Pencil, where he's making the point that no one in the world knows how to build a pencil because of all the things that have to come about in order for just a simple pencil to come about. The rubber, the graphite, the wood. You have the wood. Well, then you have to go back to the manufacturer of the wood. Well, then he's not the one that cuts down the tree. He doesn't know how to cut down the proper tree to do it right. Well, the person that uses the axe doesn't know how to make that axe. He knows what axe to use, but he doesn't know how to make it, and so on and so forth. And so, but pencils exist. So there's a cognitive endpoint, but where's the start of it? The start of it, even in the I, Pencil essay, has to go all the way back to a first cause. So even there, no one knows how to make the world, the universe, except for maybe one person, one being.
The guy who made the pencil.
The guy who made the pencil, the first pencil. Right. The non-Christian rationalist is here in a quandary, for his motivations press him in two directions simultaneously. We got him on the ropes. This is where we want him, the two ropes. On one hand, he wants to affirm that there are complete explanations of events. Therefore, he wants to honor a first cause. On the other hand, if the rationalist honors the first cause, he will have to concede his rational quest and submit his mind to the conclusion implicit in the first cause. That there is a first cause. I want to believe in that first cause. If there is one, so that's the one. But he does not want to cease his rational quest. He wants always to have the privilege of asking, well, why? But if he denies the possibility of a first cause, he becomes indistinguishable from the rationalist. So in the end, we are forced to choose between belief in a first cause and irrationalism. Ah, that's exactly where we want to be, because we have an answer to the first cause. We can have an argument about, well, what does that first cause look like? But if we get them to the first cause, man, we're halfway there.
Right. All right. Good.
And there is an endpoint to that argument.
Exactly.